Chapter 10. Badly to make some prisoners. He too seemed disappointed for a moment. "What? Is it you?" apostrophe he cried. But he dismounted at once to embrace me, for he was an old friend of my family. I pointed to the body at our feet, and said only these two words. "Gasparuz." Apostrophe apostrophe, he threw his arms up in astonishment. "Aha! You're strong man. Always to the last with your strong man. No matter. He saved our lives, when the earth trembled enough, to make the bravest faint with fear. I was frightened out of my wits. But he know. K. Gape. Where's the hero who got the best of him? Ha! 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 What killed him, Chico? Apostrophe, his own strength. General, apostrophe I answered. Zaya, but Gasparuz breathed yet. I had him carried in his poncho under the shelter of some bushes on the very ridge from which he had been gazing so fixedly at the fort, while unseen death was hovering already over his head. Our troops had bivouacked round the fort. Towards daybreak I was not surprised to hear that I was designated to command the escort of a prisoner who was to be sent down at once to Santiago. Of course the prisoner was Gasparu's wife. I have named you out of regard for your feelings, apostrophe General Robles remarked. Though the woman really ought to be shot for all the harm he has done to the Republic. Apostrophe apostrophe, and as I made a movement of shocked protest, he continued. Now he is as well as dead, she is of no importance. Nobody will know what to do with her. However, the government wants her. Apostrophe apostrophe, he shrugged his shoulders. I suppose he must have buried large quantities of his loot in places that she alone knows of. Apostrophe apostrophe, at dawn I saw her coming up the ridge, guarded by two soldiers, and carrying her child on her arm. I walked to meet her. Is he living yet? Apostrophe apostrophe, she asked, confronting me with that white, impassive face he used to look at in an adoring way. I bent my head, and led around a clump of bushes without a word. His eyes were open. He breathed with difficulty, and uttered her name with a great effort. Herminia. Apostrophe apostrophe, she knelt at his head. The little girl, unconscious of him, and with her big eyes looking about, began to chatter suddenly, in a joyous, thin voice. She pointed a tiny finger at the rosy glow of sunrise behind the black shapes of the peaks. And while that child talk, incomprehensible and sweet to the ear, lasted, those two, the dying man and the kneeling woman, remained silent, looking into each other's eyes, listening to the frail sound. Then the prattle stopped. The child laid its head against its mother's breast and was still. It was for you, apostrophe he began. Forgive. Apostrophe his voice failed him. Presently I heard a mutter and caught the pitiful words. Not strong enough. Apostrophe apostrophe, she looked at him with an extraordinary intensity. He tried to smile, and in a humble tone, forgive me, apostrophe he repeated. Leaving you. Dot dot apostrophe, she bent down, dry-eyed and in a steady voice. On all the earth I have loved nothing but you, Gaspar, apostrophe she said. His head made a movement. His eyes revived. At last. Apostrophe apostrophe he sighed out. Then, anxiously, but is this true? Dot dot is this true? Apostrophe, as true as that there is no mercy and justice in this world, apostrophe she answered him, passionately. She stooped over his face. He tried to raise his head, but it fell back, and when she kissed his lips he was already dead. His glazed eyes stared at the sky, on which pink clouds floated very high. But I noticed the eyelids of the child, pressed to its mother's breast, droop and close slowly, as he had gone to sleep. The widow of Gasparuz, the strong man, allowed me to lead her away without shedding a tear. For traveling we had arranged for her a side saddle very much like a chair, with a board swung beneath to rest her feet on. And the first day she rode without uttering a word, and hardly for one moment turning her eyes away from the little girl, whom she held on her knees. At our first camp, I saw her during the night walking about, rocking the child in her arms, and gazing down at it by the light of the moon. After we had started on our second day's march, she asked me how soon we should come to the first village of the inhabited country. I said we should be there about noon. And will there be women there? She inquired. I told her that it was a large village. There will be men and women there, Senora, I said, whose hearts shall be made glad by the news that all the unrest and war is over now. Yes, it is all over now, she repeated. Then, after a time, senior officer, what will your government do with me? I do not know, Senora, I said. They will treat you well, no doubt. We Republicans are not savages and take no vengeance on women. She gave me a look at the word Republicans which I imagined full of undying hate. But an hour or so afterwards, as we drew up to let the baggage mules go first along a narrow path skirting a precipice, she looked at me with such a white, troubled face that I felt a great pity for her. Senior officer, she said, I am weak, I tremble. It is an insensate fear. And indeed her lips did tremble, while she tried to smile, glancing at the beginning of the narrow path which was not so dangerous after all. I am afraid I shall drop the child. Gaspar saved your life, you remember. Take her from me. I took the child out of her extended arms. Shut your eyes, Senora, and trust to your mule, I recommended. She did so, and with her pallor and her wasted, thin face she looked death-like. At a turn of the path, where a great crag of purple porphyry closes the view of the lowlands, I saw her open her eyes. I rode just behind her holding the little girl with my right arm. The child is all right, I cried encouragingly. Yes, she answered, faintly, and then, to my intense terror, I saw her stand upon the footrest, staring horribly, and throw herself forward into the chasm on our right. I cannot describe to you the sudden and abject fear that came over me at that dreadful sight. It was a dread of the abyss, the dread of the cracks which seemed to nod upon me. My head swam. I pressed the child to my side, and sat my horse as still as a statue. I was speechless, and cold all over. Her mule staggered, sidling close to the rock, and then went on. My horse only pricked up his ears with a slight snort. My heart stood still, and from the depths of the precipice the stones rattling in the bed of the furious stream made me almost insane with their sound. Next moment we were round the turn, and on the broad and grassy slope. And then I yelled. My men came running back to me in great alarm. It seems that at first I did nothing but shout, S.E. has given the child into my hands. S.E. has given the child into my hands. The escort thought I had gone mad. General Santiera ceased, and got up from the table. And that is all, senors, he concluded, with a courthouse glance at his rising guests. But what became of the child? General? We asked. Ah, the child, the child. He walked to one of the windows opening on his beautiful garden, the refuge of his old days. Its fame was great in the land. Keeping us back with a raised arm, he called out, Erminia, Erminia, and waited. Then his cautioning arm dropped, and we crowded to the windows. From a clump of trees a woman had come upon the broad walk bordered with flowers. We could hear the rustle of her starched petticoats, and observed the ample spread of her old-fashioned black silk skirt. She looked up, and seeing all these eyes staring at her stopped, frowned, smiled, shook her finger at the general, who was laughing boisterously, and drawing the black lace on her head so as to partly conceal her haughty profile, passed out of our sight, walking with stiff dignity. You have beheld the guardian angel of the old man and her to whom you owe all that is seemly and comfortable in my hospitality. Somehow, sinners, though the flame of love has been kindled early in my breast, I have never married. And because of that, perhaps the sparks of the sacred fire are not yet extinct here. He struck his broad chest. Still alive, he said, with serio-comic emphasis. Be but I shall not marry now. She is General Santiera's adopted daughter and heiress. One of our fellow guests, a young naval officer, described her afterwards as a short, stout, old girl of 40 or thereabouts. We had all noticed that her hair was turning gray, and that she had very fine black eyes. And, General Santiera continued, neither would she ever hear of marrying anyone. A real calamity. Good, patient, devoted to the old man. A simple soul. But I would not advise any of you to ask for her hand, for if she took yours into hers it would be only to crush your bones. Ah! She does not jest on that subject. And she is the own daughter of her father, the strong man who perished through his own strength. The strength of his body, of his simplicity, of his love. An ironic tale. The informer, Mr. Ten, came to me, preceded by a letter of introduction from a good friend of mine in Paris, specifically to see my collection of Chinese bronzes and porcelain. My friend in Paris is a collector too. He collects neither porcelain, nor bronzes, nor pictures, nor medals, nor stamps, nor anything that could be profitably dispersed under an auctioneer's hammer. He would reject, with genuine surprise, the name of a collector. Never thealous, that's what he is by temperament. He collects acquaintances. It is delicate work. He brings to it the patience, the passion, the determination of a true collector of curiosities. His collection does not contain any royal personages. I don't think he considers them sufficiently rare and interesting. But, with that except Ian, he has met with and talked to everyone worth knowing on any conceivable ground. He observes them, listens to them, penetrates them, measures them, and puts the memory away in the galleries of his mind. He has schemed, plotted, and traveled all over Europe in order to add to his collection of distinguished personal acquaintances. As he is wealthy, well-connected, and unprejudiced, his collection is pretty complete, including objects, or should I say subjects, whose value is unappreciated by the vulgar, and often unknown to popular fame. Of Trevelt, of modern times, the world knows him as a revolutionary writer whose savage irony has laid bare the rottenness of the most respectable institutions. He has scalped every venerated head, and has mangled at the stake of his wit every received opinion, and every recognized principle of conduct and policy. Who does not remember his flaming red revolutionary pamphlets? Their sudden swarmings used to overwhelm the powers of every continental police like a plague of crimson gadflies. But this extreme writer has been also the active inspirer of secret societies, the mysterious unknown number one of desperate conspiracies suspected and unsuspected, matured, or baffled. And the world at large has never had an inkling of that fact. This accounts for him going about amongst us to this day, a veteran of many subterranean campaigns, standing aside now, safe within his reputation of merely the greatest destructive publicist that ever lived. Thus wrote my friend, adding that Mr. Ten was an enlightened connoisseur of bronzes and china, and asking me to show him my collection. X turned up in due course. My treasures are this Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.